This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice. And a heads up, this episode contains sensitive content that may be upsetting for some listeners. Please read the warning in the show notes before listening to the episode.
So, look, I'm not going to lie.
Yes.
We're already recording. We just go with it.
Yeah, here. Absolutely. Let's talk about money this time.
Yes. So, everyone, thanks for joining us on My Millennial Money. This is part two of Alicia Aitken Radburn. Is that how I pronounce
it? Yeah, it was bang on.
Giddy up. And then part one.
Derailed.
It's supposed to be the one and done, but we got derailed earlier in the year. So, we're just here to talk about you and your life. So, who are you?
Oh, who am I?
Alicia, if I was going to start with a question like that.
Well, I've listened to My Millennial Stories and I've heard this question and I've thought the answers are so lovely and people describing themselves like vivacious, bubbly. I think I could probably go bubbly. I'm like an optimistic person, somewhat energetic, less so as I get closer to 30. I have varied interests, everything from RuPaul's Drag Race to obviously politics that derailed our whole first attempt at this.
Yes.
And I guess the reason why I find myself here chatting to you, Glenn, is that I've found a really big affinity and belonging in the personal finance community. And I consume basically every Australian personal finance podcast, Facebook group, Instagram, and I gain a lot of joy from it. I think we're all looking for a little bit of belonging in different communities. And I think that people who listen to your podcast, like I think you talk about the My Millennial Money community a lot. And I think we really need to sort of reflect and come back to how wonderful that community is and being a part of it.
Yeah, and it's funny because, like, we talk about the My Millennial Money community, like, there's one thing that we've all got in common. We want to do better with our own money and our own financial goals, whatever they are. Everything else is after the fact.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we talked last episode on politics. Well, that's actually after the fact. If you want to talk politics and, you know, get rage bait in the Facebook group, well, it's not going to end well because people just end up deleting their post or we boot you out because, you know,
yeah,
you're unbelievable.
I'd almost say, like, not to delve into the politics very much at all, but when you say it's after the fact, I think that, you know, for me personally, the reason why I've sort of gravitated towards personal finance and wanting control and financial independence for myself in this life is probably because I find the political landscape quite challenging as an individual, or have done at various points in my life. So it sort of forced me to, what forced is probably too strong a word, but it has made me attracted to just looking after my own little patch and doing as well and being as safe and secure for myself as I can and my future family in this life.
Yeah, and that's it, because I think, you know, our views on the world, insert topic here, being after the fact of we're all here because we've got personal finances as a passion in common, it's not to say that your views of the world aren't real, it's not to say that your opinion isn't valid, it's just more to say that, you know, we can leave some stuff at the door. And we can all talk about share, like a share investment. And I've learned the longer I do this podcast, I can't please everyone and I won't. But, you know, if to a point, buying one share in Woolworths, I don't even know what the share price is, buying that share in Woolworths, remove the ethical lens.
Yes.
But that share isn't religious. That share isn't of a different heritage. That share isn't political. You know what I mean? So it actually doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, I would say that, like, I think we just need to recognize that everyone comes to this community from a different lens. Like some people will be in, you know, all of these communities, yourself, any of the other Australian personal finance peeps. So some people will be there being like, I want to get rich. Like I'm going to be like, I'm going to have all these investment properties and all of these, like I'm going to invest in that dirtiest miner that I can find because I think that's going to make me heaps of money. Oh, but
love
other
that black gold.
So some people will be like, you know, richy rich hat on, but others will be like, I'm coming to it from a point of survival. Like I earn money because, you know, and that's probably shifted over the time. In university, it was like, I could really do with an extra $5 right now to go get myself like a Macca's dollar deal. And now it's more like creating my home and creating my future life. And I think we just need to sort of, acknowledge that people will be coming from different places and that's okay.
So what place did you come from? Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Sydney in Lane Cove and it was just me and my mum. My mum's a single mum and has done an absolutely fabulous job. I'd say probably the very quickest context is that we didn't grow up with very much. My childhood was sort of the beats of Centrelink and, really scrimping and saving and all of that jazz. I think that probably a lot of listeners have had similar experiences. But that being said, my mum never had any, you know, apart from the fact that sometimes she would say, this week's a Vegemite sandwich week, and that would be like code for, okay, we're really like at the end of the wallet here. But other than that, you know, going through primary school, going through high school, I was never without anything. I did all the extracurriculars, never missed an excursion. And that was really fabulous. So I had an awesome childhood, but I just think that my childhood's definitely informed how I think about money and how I act with money because I was, you know, so hyper aware of political changes or how difficult it is to get Centrelink and all of that.
So what did your mum do for work?
So my mum was a beauty therapist.
Yeah.
And just sort of plodded along. She worked really, really hard, supplemented by, you know, single parent payments. And I think that's where you get sort of into this difficulty where if you're sort of a low to middle income earner raising one child, and trying to give them like the best of the best, I think that is where we felt really stretched.
Like a lot of people hearing this, if they know Sydney, would say, like, particularly right now, today's standards.
Yes.
Oh, growing up in Lane Cove, that must have been difficult.
So, but I mean, wait. More context. We lived in community housing, so it's slightly different from Housing Commission in the sense that, like, the way affordable housing policy works is, you know, Housing Commission is generally groups of flats that are in the same sort of location and as a community, whereas community housing sort of focuses on placing people in existing housing but at a subsidized rate. So
yes.
I've spoken about this on my own podcast that is very much more political. It's called In the House and in the Senate. But in order, you know, public housing waitlists are just awful around the country. They were when I was growing up, they are now. And so in order to get into that subsidized housing, there was actually a period of time where mum and I stayed in a women's shelter in Sydney CBD because that was sort of the only way to, you know, expedite the process and be on the priority waiting list and finally get into a home.
Gosh. So for those, and I'm probably one of them, you know, the Housing Commission, quote unquote, where it is like the suburb and it's just every house is part of the Housing Commission. Do they even still call it that?
I don't think so. But I think it's a very 90s term. So please excuse.
Yes. Whereas, you know, the subsidized housing, that was literally, is your mum on the lease and then the government subsidizes heavily, or is the house owned by the government? How does that work?
I'm not quite sure. I think potentially it's owned by the government and then it's just subsidized rent.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
But I was going back to the point of sort of always being under an illusion of perhaps how much we were struggling. I never knew. I was off to ballet. I was off to jazz. I was doing violin and piano.
Yeah. Affordable renting housing in New South Wales, and this is New South Wales, it will probably be different everywhere, is usually managed by non-profit community housing providers or private organisations.
And there's all different types as well. Like in my day job, I work with a homelessness services provider, and I guess what I've become a little bit better acquainted with is the housing continuum. Like you've got everything from a crisis accommodation where people are rough sleeping and need a bed for the night and hopefully get connected to some sort of wraparound services around mental health, AOD, alcohol and other drugs, all of that jazz to sort of send them on a good path. So then you've got crisis, you've got transitional housing, which is a little bit longer. So perhaps someone who's come out of a mental health facility, in potentially being discharged into homelessness, they can stay there for a longer period of time, sort of like 6 to 12 months. And then you move into the sort of affordable social housing, which is really for your like lower income earners. And I don't have all the answers, but this is where my passion lies of this sort of helping people escape this cycle of poverty, because it's very hard to do your income versus expenditure, hard to do Glenn James spending plan when you've got your rent is 70% of your income.
And absolutely.
Yeah. So,
but it is a bigger problem. And you know what? We're just going to go back to you because I don't want to talk philosophies.
One more thing I'd say on this would be that like this is where we talk about Job Seeker, and in the context of COVID when Job Seeker, it really got quite a significant boost. And the one thing that a lot of people said who, you know, are on Job Seeker is that finally that they had the sort of mind space and capacity of just having like that extra $200 a week to sort of sort out their lot in life, just progress a little bit more. Like you sort of move from that survival to being able to propel yourself forward. So that's what I do. Like to get it back to me, that's what I'm trying to like sort of move my career in the direction of, because I do want to be waking up every morning, going to work and feeling like I'm making a difference in someone else's life. And I think, you know, I've tried to do the evaluation. This will fit into my millennial career. Tried to do the evaluation of like, what are my skills? What is my experience? I've got government experience. I've worked in politics. I think I'm like, to take it back to describing words, I think I am quite vivacious and bubbly. I can connect with people. So where does that lead me? Like maybe eventually I'd really like to sort of go into the executive levels of a not-for-profit and get some stuff done.
Yeah. So are you an only child?
I am, yeah.
I don't know if you said that before. Excuse me if you did.
Yeah, I am.
And what's mum doing now?
So mum is currently living, she has a little place in Townsville and she is just sort of pottering, I'd say. She had a rough sort of start of the year it's kind of hard. I think she's just trying to get herself to a place. Like she's in this stage at the moment. Sorry, you can probably edit some of this jumble out. She's 63, and I think she's experiencing her own challenges around ageism. So for instance, she was a beauty therapist. It's very hard as a 63-year-old woman who perhaps like finds it difficult now to stand on her feet all day and wax people. Like, it's quite physical work.
Absolutely. And not that I've had a wax, but I can imagine.
Well, Glenn, the time is now. It's quite physical work, and it's also hard to go into an environment where, like, you know, when I go get my eyebrows waxed, it's usually like a 23-year-old TAFE student. Hard. She has done it. She's, like, gone into environments where she's working at the Brazilian Beauty in Brisbane and with a bunch of 23-year-olds, and a 26-year-old is her manager, who's, you know, younger than her daughter. That's challenging.
Yeah. Did she, like, you know, break out of the community housing cycle?
Yeah, we definitely did. So there was a period sort of in my, I'd say like my high school period, where she actually owned her own business in Lane Cove. It was called Art of Beauty. And it was just, you know, one room. She had a really, she is amazing at what she does. Best eyebrows in Sydney. and she really managed to, she has a very loyal clientele, and we just really ticked along for a while. And I think that was a period of time where, there was slightly less pressure. And, you know, I started working as well. I was working at the French bakery for $7.85 an hour.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. And then, you know, is there any significance to you and your broader family in Townsville?
No, you know what it was when, so she, towards the end of her time in her own business, she was, I think, a lot of sort of financial pressures, different things sort of compounded at the same time. And I was finally at an age where I was at university. I was the president of my student union at Sydney University, which came with it, like, I think I got $20,000 a year. And so I had little, like, 20 grand as a uni student is like, you are rolling in it. And so I was finally, there was a bad day where actually her electricity at work, she came back to find that it had been cut off. And that basically engendered a bit of a menti bee, as the kids are saying, bit of like just a bit of a hard day. And so I remember I got on to, you know, Expedia or something, booked her. I knew that Townsville was her soul place, like somewhere where she felt really happy. And she was, back in the day, she was an aerobics instructor up in Townsville. And I just tried to think, she needs to get out of this situation. And I booked her a week on the Strand in Townsville at one of the little apartments, booked her flights, and she went up there. And then she rang me back midway through her week up there, very, you know, decompressed, and said, "Leash, I'm going to move up here. So you better find yourself a place." And then I was, that was like my first time moving out of home. I was 23, I think.
And you shipped your mum off.
Yeah. So mum went back to her soul place. And she's been, you know, back to like what she's doing now. Another thing that I should raise, and I hope, I mean, I don't think she's ever going to listen to my millennial money, but so I just feel a bit sensitive talking about her so openly and what's been going on for her. But I think it's important. We always talk about like people, particularly older people, retraining. She went back to TAFE over the last 2 years. Obviously, like, COVID's been really difficult, and she was doing an aged care cert. She hasn't quite finished it because, you know, it's also really hard. It's hard for older people to go into tertiary or vocational education. Like, I remember navigating my university systems, and those were awful. And so for like an older person who, you know, is probably just trying to like get their head around their MacBook, how are you meant to like?
Well, the thing is, there's a lot going on there, because age 60 in this society isn't old anymore.
Yes.
Like, so we will have different roles and always learning and always doing education.
Yes.
So it's just, we've all got to kind of deal with this.
And so I think if we're going to talk about like retraining people, I just think that we need to, and if this age is being pushed out even further and further, and we're, you know, dying later, which is great, we just need to make sure that that is that comes with, you know, appropriate supports, not just, you know, here's a MacBook. You know, you're probably very detached from technology after being a beauty therapist for 30 years. Go for gold.
But there's a but coming, and it doesn't help people that might be there at the moment.
Yeah.
But if you're under 30 and you're listening to this, you've got an absolute warning that, you know, life's long, and the older you get and the more money that you have, the more options you have. Like, that's just a fact of life. So that's why if you're under 30 particularly, keep away from consumer debt. Start those habits now.
Glenn, and this is why, like, looking at my mum and sort of the struggles that she has had with, you know, a line of credit here, something over there, that has compounded her financial pressures. It has completely, and one day I'll speak to her about this, it has completely shaped in a positive way. I wish it wasn't such a pressurized situation for her, but it's really shaped me getting serious and consuming all of your media and John's opinions on property. It's made me want to set myself up for the future.
So what took you to Perth, and when did you go to Perth?
So I came to Perth for love. Some of your listeners may have seen me fall in love on Bachelor in Paradise season 3. It was my second go. And yeah, fell in love with Glenn with a double N. So my partner is also Glenn. And we'll be seeing you at the Perth live show on August 5.
Oh, awesome.
I'm so excited.
Oh, I'm glad you're coming.
Yeah, so we met in November 2019 and on the show, obviously, fell in love. He was in Perth. I was in Sydney. He has his own business, Perth City Air. Shout out if anyone needs a refrigeration mechanic. He has got all your service and installation needs.
So the one that you're on, it was all the chicks and the one dude, or was it all the dudes and the one chick?
Okay, so Glenn, in order to qualify for Bachelor in Paradise, which is like the island spin-off show in Fiji, you have to go through the Bachelor or the Bachelorette. So like Glenn was
like a Hunger Games.
Yeah, it was like round one, fight. So Glenn was on Angie Kent's season. She was on Gogglebox. You're not a reality TV person.
No.
If I was talking about Boston Legal, you'd be like, so Angie
or West Wing.
Exactly. So and I was the honey badger. So then we both got rejected. We ended up on an island. And as I said, I did it twice. So the first season I went to Fiji, I did like fully fall in love with a guy, and he was not into me, unrequited love, which was very sad. And then I was nearly not going to do it again, but I did it and met Glenn. And then so we'd been dating for about 4 months at long distance, and then COVID hit, and I wasn't working in Sydney at that point in time. I'd sort of left a workplace that had become quite toxic just after filming, so around December 2019. And so I'm sitting there, like, COVID's hit March. I'd just been traveling, month in Bali, 2 weeks in Cambodia. Those were the days. And some of my friends in government over here in Western Australia knew I was dating Glenn, and they were like, hey, just a heads up, like, we think Mark McGowan's getting really serious about this border situation. You should probably think about what you guys want to do. And I packed up 2 suitcases, and I still had a lease until July. So a good couple of, like, 3 or 4 months in Sydney. I just packed up these 2 suitcases, moved to Perth. I was also like, I had 10 grand in savings, but I didn't have income coming in. And Glenn paid our rent in Perth while I was paying my rent in Sydney for 4 months.
Gosh, isn't everyone on reality TV rich?
Absolutely not. I was like begging Warner Brothers, who was the production company, because, you know, Bachelor in Paradise was a good payday.
How much do you get paid on reality TV?
So The Bachelor is $90 a day, and I will, yeah, so it's not great. It's really not great. I mean, you've got your rent at home still going out, but you don't have any.
You probably earn more as an extra on Home and Away.
So Bachelor in Paradise, you graduate a little bit, and I'll say this because I know it's publicly available on the internet.
Yeah.
Generally, people negotiate higher amounts, but it's usually sure. $500 a day. So, you know, spending 3 to 4 weeks in Fiji, I had left with like a good little pay packet that was going to keep me going. But I was usually they pay it once the show has gone to air. And because of COVID, because they didn't have anything else in production, Channel 10 pushed Bachelor in Paradise's airing into August 2020. So there was this period that I was in Perth basically like knocking on their door being like, please, can I have my money?
Yeah, far out.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back right after this.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
Okay, we're back. So you're in Perth.
Yes.
You're in love, whatever that is. And you're resetting up your career, your life, blah, blah, blah. So fast forward, what are you actually doing now?
Okay, so now I am a strategic communications consultant. I work for a company called SEC Newgate, and we do a variety of things. A lot of it is government relations, so we help companies talk to government, help them with you know, my niche is not-for-profits, and I help not-for-profits with their advocacy. So, you know, yeah. If they want a particular policy changed, or they want to, let's say, as we were talking about, let's raise the rate of job seeker, I'll help them develop and deliver a campaign. And so I did fall on my feet, but that was a difficult time because I was unemployed for about 7 months there. People were sort of, there were job ads up there during COVID, you know, 2020 COVID, but it was like the job ads were there, but they weren't really actually hiring. And also the other challenge was I had only really ever come from Labor Party jobs, and this was the first time sort of presenting myself to the private sector, and presenting may sound like something different.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like it was the first time going out without that. There is some sort of security, and basically in the Labor Party, if you're an active member of the Labor Party, they know you're committed to the cause, and this is political parties across the board. You're a hard worker. Usually if you're in a spot where you're unemployed, you can sort of just shout out to the ether, hey guys, I'm available. I really need some work.
Right.
Similar in other industries, like I know it happens in TV production as well. Like if you've been a producer on this show and this show and this show, and you've got all that network and those connections, you sort of just like let it be known to some people and they'll look out for you and, you know. So that's so really, that's proper networking there.
Yeah, so the 7 months of no work, it wasn't literally I'm not earning
one cent. Oh, no, I was on Centrelink.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was on Centrelink for a period.
But you weren't earning from personal exertion.
Like
you weren't employed.
No, I wasn't. I was unemployed.
Yeah. What was that like for your own mental health?
Really difficult, and particularly like I was in a new city as well with no support structures, no friends, often going into lockdowns. It was a beautiful.
And having someone pay your rent.
Yeah, that part was good, except my Sydney rent was way more expensive than Perth rent. I'll tell you. Guys, I'm really leaning into Mark McGowan's campaign here, but Perth is just like, in Sydney, I felt like I had absolutely no hope in the world, particularly when I was single. Like I would like to think that I could have made it happen, and I probably would have, but I'd be looking at like a $600K shoebox apartment somewhere.
Here's a random thought. Like I've got lots of friends in the States, and a lot of people that we know and hear of in the States, like they always move around the States. Like no one moves in Australia.
Yeah, I know.
Like, if you're struggling on the East Coast and you've got a bit of flexibility and you're a bit young, you've got nothing hugely tying down, bloody go and Go try Perth or Adelaide. Like,
yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I really think that we should sort of start having that conversation, because move over to Perth and finally, like, okay, my salary is increased, and house prices, like Glenn and I are looking to buy probably within the next sort of, we got a very expensive wedding to pay for. And then probably a year or two after that, we're going to really put the pedal to the metal on saving for a home deposit. We are going to be able to buy like a 700, 800K family home 15 minutes from the CBD.
Yeah, shut up. It's good, isn't it?
It's so good.
So when is your wedding?
Okay, so wedding is April 22nd, 2023.
And have you, like, you've got a big wedding to pay for. Like, have you still got a good enough profile to be able to say to, like, Women's Day or New Idea, hey, can you buy the photos or just 20 grand? Are you...
I wish. Well, I mean, I think there's one thing before that. I don't think magazines really pay anymore.
Unless you're the royal family.
Yeah, I think you'd be lucky to get like a grand or two. Like, oh, okay. I think gone are the days of paying someone $10,000 for their wedding pics. But you know,
you're just
Women's
see
Day,
it on Instagram anyway.
Women's Day, if you're listening, do hit me up. Because gladly. Yeah, no, unfortunately not. But I would say, you know, the flip side of that is that The Bachelor has led me to be able to do the sort of influencer side hustle, which is less of a side hustle, is more fruitful than my actual day-to-day salary. Yeah, yeah. Big money in social media marketing. And you would have a sense of it, Glenn, through the work that you guys do.
Yeah, so do you still generate a bit from your social media?
I generate more than my day job.
Yeah, yeah.
It's incredible. Yeah. And I have to say on that point, like, I get a little bit frustrated at myself. I'll be in conversations with people and everyone is curious about the social media content creation world. And I find myself a lot of the time justifying the work that I do by being like, but through the money, saying, oh yeah, like the HelloFresh, but also they paid me XYZ. And I actually think I get frustrated at myself for doing that because I actually really like it. I really enjoy the work. I really like the whole process I now do have a talent manager just recently, but for a good 2 years there, I was doing my own everything. So from, you know, the point, initial contact, negotiation, in content creation, invoicing, everything, figuring out like when I needed to pay GST, like I was sort of coming up to 70K and I'm like, oh, okay, now I've got to figure out this whole GST thing.
Yeah.
I really love that whole process. And the content creation itself is a really creative outlet that my day job can be a little bit dry at times. Bit of research, report writing.
Yeah, like our team, like Nate does heaps of video editing, audio, and JP does like Insta stuff. Well, like the other day when Nathan was on his honeymoon, I had to do a promo for or someone like that. And I like set up the camera in my kitchen. I filmed it all. I did the editing myself on Premiere Pro.
Amazing.
And like, it was fun.
It's a fun process, right? And I find that like what I've also enjoyed about the whole experience is I'm always...
The amount of edits the agency want crap me to tears and I almost told them to shove it up their ass and don't need your money and we'll just
I think that you've got the same approach as me. I'm also the shove it up your ass. I'm like, I don't need it. I'm on to the next thing. Yeah, but I think what I also like, and you know, you'll be doing it with your ring light in your kitchen and Premiere Pro, I'm always learning new things as well. I'm watching other content creators. I'm figuring out like a new app that helps me to do this cool light thing or whatever. Mm. And I love that. Like I love learning.
Yeah, it's just a good outlet. And, you know, my team were joking like, basically that week, I kind of was in this creative mood and I did the videos and then I recorded like stock market crapped itself. So I recorded a solo podcast. I edited it myself. I uploaded it myself.
Oh, yeah.
And everyone's like, do you actually need Did you hear that one?
Yeah, I loved it.
The sirens and
the... the scary. And then you did it again on the podcast with John.
Oh, yeah.
Stresses me out to no end. Is that like... Yeah. Did you like YouTube nuclear war siren?
I tried to find some like royalty-free type music that I could use, and then I got like the warning siren, the woo.
But I mean, like, it was of the time, because I did open up my my self-wealth the other day, and it was probably my first. It's really funny because, like, and so to finish off the timeline, I start working in about August 2020. That's when the show starts coming out as well. I think it would have just been like I was halfway through the season when I got my job, and my boss was like, you know, like you, nothing about reality TV. And she was like, is there anything that I should know? Like, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, I do have this like one conflict with this chick called Kira. We're like sitting at this banquet. And she was like, I do not care. It's fine.
Yeah.
So like I was, the season was airing when I got my first job. And that was basically when I got my first job, when I got my first job in Perth and I started working again. And it was around then, around October, November, once I had, you know, two-ish grand coming in a fortnight, that I really sat down and I did my like split of how my money, I do like sort of a zero sum budget, flicked it all off into oblivion every time my pay comes in. And that's when I started investing in shares, and we've done really well. I've accumulated quite a bit of money because I've been very committed. And it was that with the nuclear war sirens that I opened up self-wealth, and it was like down a bajillion dollars.
But there's no cause for alarm though.
Well, there's no cause for alarm. And to be honest, more than anything, I sort of took it as like a, because it's the biggest loss that I'd ever seen on my screen, I sort of took it as a, wow, you've done really well. There's a lot, there's a lot of money in here now for it to be.
Yeah. So, okay. So, how old are you and Glennie?
So, Glennie is 35 and Leishi is 29.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And, like, you're not 18 and, you know, getting married next year. So, you've had a bit of experience out in the wild.
Yeah.
What's it been like merging your lives together, and how are you doing that?
So, really, really well.
Cool. Well, we'll leave it there. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening.
It's really good.
You've been real. I've been Glenn James. I'll see you later.
I think probably the first thing to say is I think we are very lucky in the sense that we have very, very compatible approaches to most things in life, personal finances included. I never really thought that I would land with a person who is, we just like, we really seem to just have the same thoughts, aspirations, goals, and that makes everything a whole lot easier. Because I think, you know, if to talk about like relationships in general, I think that, and you see this in lots of personal finance media, they'll talk about things like the difficulties when you have one spender, one saver in the relationship. And I would say that, you know, Glenn and I are, I'd say we're probably like a hybrid. We sometimes, we're both the sort of people that at one point in the year, maybe a couple of points through the year, we'll go to Maya and we will spend $1,000 on a whole new wardrobe, and then we won't buy clothes for another 6 months. And so it's good to be in the same sort of rhythm like that, because it means that you don't get those relationship conflict points where Glenn's just gone to industry and spent $800 on board shorts and I'm like, well, that's not my priority. I'm just able to be like, oh no, I know your behavior because it's very similar to mine. And let's leave it at that. So from the practical perspective, like we've decided to join finances in the sense that we've got a joint account that we both put a certain sum into each fortnight. And we've also decided, so like we sat down and we sit down every sort of 6 months and reconfigure it. So for instance, we had to do one, we had to sit down for a little finance date recently because we live in a 3-bedroom place. We were, as of this week, we are now living there alone. Previous to that, we lived with Glenn's got a twin brother and we lived with Glenn's twin brother and his brother's boyfriend. Wow. And so our rent has doubled. And so we had to sit down and sort of redo our savings. And so at the moment we've got like the one account that both sums of money come into, and then we put some into a house deposit account and some into an account which I'm calling Big Happy, which is for like holidays, furniture, alcohol.
So all the Big Happy stuff. Yeah. So your investing account.
Yes.
Like you've both decided that we're getting married. Well, I guess you have both decided that unless someone's doing it unwillingly. You've both decided that you want to buy a home to live in.
Yes.
You've got, and I don't know what Glenn's got in terms of investments and whatnot, you've got self-wealth account you mentioned.
Yep.
Have we said, okay, we're pressing pause on investing for a hot minute and putting all energy towards the wedding fund, then we're going to put all energy towards the home fund, then when the dust settles, we'll then continue investing, or we're still putting a monthly amount in the investing account and saving concurrently for the other stuff? How are you guys doing it?
So I'd say probably like how do I put this? What do they say in the castle? The vibe of the thing?
Yeah, just vibe it out.
Yeah, I think generally like the what you've described, that is generally the vibe in the sense that like we are mostly concentrated on the wedding at the moment. Any little bits and pieces like the cream on the top, for instance, I generally view my influencer cashola as my usual behavior has been that lands in my account and I transfer it straight to self-wealth. Just because it's not like I've got a normal sort of day job wage, that, you know, covers, I should be able to, if the influencer stuff fell away tomorrow, which it very well could, I could absolutely operate on my day job wage.
It's not mission critical.
Totally. So I've just been filtering that to investments. So yes, the vibe is there. I'd say where it probably differs slightly is that to get into the wedding budget itself, let's say, I don't really want to say the amount that we're spending because it's too much money.
But we'll say 60 grand.
Let's say 60 grand. You're not far off. Maybe a couple more up.
We'll call it 75.
It's not 75. In between those figures. Well, there you go, everyone. Let's call it 60. And what I've done is we're getting like a small family contribution. So what I've done is I've sort of split it up. So I've projected how much we're going to be able to save in our joint account together by wedding date. And so each has I've written like $60,000. I've been like family contribution. Joint account needs to contribute 20 grand to this, let's say 30 grand to this exercise. And then Glenn and Alicia both separately, because we do have some personal savings, we both separately have to be prepared to chip in 10K. We have to have that money ready to go. And we both do at the moment. So I think that's where probably the active saving is happening in the joint account. So like at the moment, I just paid, what did I pay? Accommodation. We've got like where we're getting married. It's also an Airbnb and there's some venues on site, like there's some rooms on site. And so I had to pay a bit of money for that. So now
where are you getting married?
Oh, it's in Denmark. This is the exclusive. I haven't actually said that. Denmark, which is 5-hour drive south from Perth, not in Europe.
Oh, I was like, okay,
Denmark, yeah. Europe, definitely not. It would not be costing, it would cost double if it was in Denmark. So, yeah.
That saves my follow-up question of like, what's the connection with Denmark?
No, it's so, well, the connection with Denmark is that we went down there and it's more just like, it's, let's say, Margaret River vibe, sort of wine country-esque. We went down and stayed there last year before he proposed. And when we stayed in one of the Airbnbs and they offered us a tour of the wedding venue and I like managed expectations. I was like, no, we're not there yet. But like, obviously we will come have a tour. We're very, I'm a people pleaser. And then when we were driving home, Glenn looked at me and was like, I would really like to get married there. And it was the first time that we'd ever really like talked about the future.
So that was a soft proposal.
It was a soft proposal, wasn't it? Oh my God, I was just, I'm
blushing now.
There
you go, Ron, you heard it here first.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, so I just had to pay. I'm trying to, and this is taking it back to personal finance and wedding. I could do a whole podcast for you on wedding budget tips, but
yeah, go on, do it. Whatever. You put it up. But, need content.
But
can you do a guest host?
Yeah, like absolutely. I would do that for you. I would
find someone
that.
Else to do it with.
Yeah, and then we'll do a wedding budget special, everything weddings. What I would encourage.
I don't want anything to do with it. I'll just you can do it and record it. I'll connect you with your H.
I would encourage people to, if you can. Oh my God, I got to tell you this one thing about our videographer. I just like fell in love with this guy when he sent me this email. He was like, basically, if you pay upfront now, I will give you a discount because I can, you know, make interest on that by having that money for a longer period of time. Right. I was like, you are absolutely my person. And so I paid up front.
No, I'm also thinking that's fine as long as you freaking show up.
Yeah.
The worst thing, creatives, listen here. You piss me off, you people.
Really? Have
the
you had some
The amount of times I've paid up front with creatives, they do all the work and they never deliver. Now, most of the time, I'll pay you half and you'll get the rest when you've freaking
now
deliver.
You're making me nervous, but I've also just spoken about him on a global podcast. So.
What podcast was that?
Yours.
Oh, yes. Yeah, sorry. I thought you did another show. I forget that ours is around the world.
So I would say, like, if you can and if you feel safe about it and you don't think that the people are going to do a runner, like maybe do it for fixed things like the accommodation. Yeah. I'm trying to pay some things, like something that's going to cost me $6,000. I would prefer to just pay that now than pay $1,000 now and then literally get everything's due a week before the wedding. And so I don't want to get to like a week before the wedding and then it's like, oh, here you owe $40,000 to all these vendors.
Yeah, that's a bit savage. Yeah. So in your self-wealth account, what time do you need to go as well?
Oh, probably like 8.
10,
your time?
Yeah. So, yeah, we've got a couple of minutes. What are you investing in your self-wealth account?
Oh, okay. So mostly I'm doing like a satellite core approach. Some
fancy.
Some good solid ETFs. We've got like Usual Suspects. I'm doing like VAS, EFI, and yeah. Oh, IXJ, Global Healthcare. Bought that at the beginning of COVID. I've got Asia. So all sort of just like general, a mix of normal ETFs and thematic ETFs. And then I do indulge in a couple of, then I would say to add to that, a couple of blue chips, like I bought CSL and a couple of speckies, and I've had a mixed run. So sometimes I'll just put $1,000 in and be like, let's see how this goes. And one of them just like, oh, he made me some money. I don't know why I called it a boy, but
yeah, but it's a money maker.
Yeah. So
the older I get,
what are you doing? So,
look, I basically keep it simple.
Yeah.
I've got IVV.
Yes.
I've
What's
got
that?
The
What's the descriptor?
Sorry, it's the What is bloody mind blank? It is the BlackRock S&P 500 fund in America. I don't like funds that are not domiciled in Australia. I've got A200, which is a beta shares Aussie equity thing.
So I've gone down the sort of like Vanguard route. You've gone like the more beta shares.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a, and everyone's going to hate me for this because I've got one. But
scum.
Yeah. Well, no, I've got a an investment bond.
What's that mean?
Well, it's...
Isn't that the really boring one that returns like...
No, it's... investment bonds, the history lesson, they used to be whole of life policies, and so it's a life insurance policy, and inside the policy there was a portion of life insurance and a cash amount, and you contribute to the policy and the cash grows over time, and over time the life insurance component gets the premium from the money that you put in and the earnings on the account. But those policies really sucked. And if you died and, you know, you had cash left over, they would take the cash as well as the life insurance. Like, they would give you the life insurance but keep the cash. Like, they were just horrendous products. And they were called whole of life policies or an insurance bond. But the actual product is still around. And they're taxed at the company tax rate. So I've got a Generation Life investment bond, which is basically a life contract that it's got no life insurance component. It's just got a menu investment options. And in that, it's got the Vanguard Diversified High Growth Fund.
Got it. Oh, VDHG, which people froth hard.
And because I'm fortunate enough to be on the highest tax bracket, it makes sense for me to be taxed at a lower tax rate. And they've got like and I do it for estate planning as well, not just tax. But anyway, I don't want to get into the complexities of why I do stuff because it's my circumstance. Oh. But I just like to keep things simple.
Yes.
I pump superannuation. You know, we're recording this at the end of the financial year. I had actually a little bit of leftover bring forward or carry forward.
Yeah,
could you do a
podcast on that stuff? Because like I'm pumping super in the sense that I'm doing the first home super saver scheme. So I've been doing like a personal contribution.
Yeah, but that's technically, I wouldn't say that technically pumping super because it's just a placeholder.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. I don't feel as accomplished, but I have been dropping, like I had my savings bucket, right? And like I just had, you know, X amount sitting in my ING savings and knowing that I will probably eventually use that bucket of money anyway for a house deposit. I just transferred 10 grand into super first home super saver scheme. And then you have to put in your notice of intent for the tax deduction. And I've done all that, but I would love to know more about the carryover stuff because I think once I stop salary sacrificing for first home
super saver. We sent you a book, didn't we?
Yeah, I've got it next to me.
Chapter 6.
Oh,
no,
okay,
7.
Good.
No, 8. I don't know. Whatever.
I'll flick
but
through
it's in
it.
There.
Is there an index?
Hang on.
An appendix?
I'll tell you what page you need to read.
Sort your money out and get invested. It's very nice. Can I ask, were you in like a studio for this picture?
Oh, no, I was just in my own studio.
Oh.
You know, it's what happens when you get professionals on the job. DJ.
I really should read this book. I've just flicked to 173 and we're talking about, it's very comprehensive, examples of active funds.
Actually, page 226.
Yeah.
Write that down. It's a bit of a chat around the investment bonds that I just talked about. And then I use this more as just my handbook. So when I'm doing podcasts like this and you say to me like, oh, what's a bring forward and what's a carry forward?
This is your
encyclopedia. I wrote it in my book. Hang on, let me just remember. Page, it's going to be page 280.
Oh my gosh, I'm just looking at the disclosures at the back. If you guys haven't already.
Okay, write down this, sorry.
Okay.
278.
278. Is that, that's carryovers. Yeah, pre-tax super contributions. Bang
oh
on.
Yeah, sorry, 277. Yeah, so carry forward and bring forward. I talk about it all there.
And you love salt and vinegar chips and Ben and Jerry's triple caramel crunch.
Yeah.
That's in the back. So also bookmark 361 and you find out all the secrets about Glenn's disclosures.
Yeah. Well, I just figure, like, I got nothing to hide. I mean, sure, I talk – like, and this is how – like, I mentioned Gumtree. Like, sell your crap on Gumtree. I'm like, oh, I may as well disclose that Gumtree did pay me once.
Yeah, because you know, Glenn, someone will hunt you down.
Yeah, someone will be like, he's just an advertisement for Gumtree. He's getting paid. Someone the other day was like, because I use Vanguard as an example in this book a lot, and they're like, oh, it's just an advertisement for Vanguard. I'm like, well, no, it's just an example. At the time of print and even doing the disclosures, I had not ever earned 1 cent from Vanguard. We only just did some work for them in April this year. Like,
yeah.
And do you know what I would say to the people that, like, you know, they might say to you, like, I can't believe she gets like $7,000 for one Instagram post and I can't believe she gets paid to do that stuff. It's like, shut up. You would do it if you had the chance.
Absolutely. And I think I've had a lot of sensitivity around that. Like I do, and this is probably something that I could work through with a therapist, to be honest. But like I do feel a lot of, I get worried about what people think about me. And, you know, for instance, just this, probably like the last 2 weeks, I don't know how it's happened, but I just had like, I had basically sponsored content going up every day. And I try not to do that. Like I try to make it a bit more balanced. I think that like in order to do sponsored content, I do need to be sort of like sharing my life. And I just don't want to be like absolutely SponCon all the time. But it just all happened that it was just like day after day. And I felt I've been in like an absolute anxiety, massive anxiety, thinking like, oh, I didn't mean for this to happen, but sorry, we got HelloFresh Tuesdays again.
Yeah.
And I do have to tell myself, like, I think, and that's that getting to my money mindset, like it's why I've really delved into the influencing opportunity, because it's been right there for me. I've built it up, and who wouldn't? Like it's just,
yeah, I know. It's just like,
also the socialist in me is like, yes, I will take this money, big amount of money from this multinational corporation. Like, no, I shouldn't. If Coke wants to pay me $10,000 for an Instagram post, absolutely. Transfer
and
as well.
I'll send them Glenn's way as well, because that's the type of person that I am.
Yeah.
See, I'm
distribute
I'm kind
wealth.
Of, I hate ads, but I'll take the money. I asked everyone who listens to the podcast in the Facebook group, I'm like, do you guys just want to pay a monthly thing? You can get the subscription, private RSS feed, no ads, no anything. And everyone's like, nah.
I'll just go past 30 seconds. And that's what I expect a little bit from my Instagram. Like, I'm like, well, I don't begrudge someone for putting up like a Bondi Boost advertisement. I just, I either watch it or I just click through it and say, go girl, you get that bag.
So for those who have criticized my podcast for having too many ads, to you, I say kindly get a grip. Because when you look at the content we produce. So normal radio, for every hour, there's probably 18 minutes of ads, maybe 15 minutes, right? On our podcast, for every hour, there is probably less than 2 minutes of ads.
Yeah, and that was what changed my mindset about what to charge big companies, because maybe we talked about this before, but I was placing an ad in a local paper for a client, and it was like a very small, very small local paper. And then they were charging $2,000 for half a page that was going to run for one day. And I was like, yeah. Okay. And I know their readership. I know how many followers I have. I need to be rethinking the way
totally. And
that I do this.
You know, we will fish. I've got a couple of two more questions to ask you, but and I'll get Nathan to beat these names and the numbers out.
Yeah.
But have you dealt much with?
Yes.
Yeah. So they'll come to us and they'll be like, oh, we got this campaign. We got, you know, oh, our budget's dollars. I'm like, that's fine. It's if you want. And they're like, oh, okay. So like, you just ask.
I love that the beeping is going to sound so salacious.
Yeah. Well, it's just.
No. I agree. And I would like it beeped too.
Yeah, that's right. And as well, it's better because it's I run a private business. And then like, and I'll get you to beat this out as well, Nathan. Like I did a webinar with,
yeah,
right. So they're like, we need to do a we want to do a webinar, and I'm like, all right, it's you know we've got. They said like we've got a little budget. I'm like, okay, well whatever, it's grand, and they're like, oh okay.
Hit me up if you want that K webinar because I'll do it.
Yeah, like I'm of the view that all these big companies got big budgets. If you want me that much, yeah, you can pay.
That's true. You're because offering something.
But as well, I'm not doing it just to gouge. I'm doing it because I need to guarantee as an employer that every single week, me and the four people, soon to be another employee, can receive money in their bank account. Every week.
Absolutely.
And I make no apologies for that. And it's just, yeah, you just.
And you're, you know, and you're you've got much better intentions than me because you're actually supporting other people, employment, jobs. I am paying, well, I am indirectly paying for a wedding and supporting other people.
Exactly.
Jobs.
You've got to pay for a meal for $150 a head.
Oh my God, I know.
Now, two final questions. Yes. Do you give financially to charity?
I do not at the moment. I do. Mm-hmm. I do. And I've got to do it today because it's, well, we're recording this on the 29th. Me and Glenn, each year, we do this thing and look it up because I won't go on too long about it, but it's called Impact 100. So we connected to it through the Fremantle community here in Perth. And so basically it's a whole bunch of people. And I actually don't know the internal working logistics of it, but when I first learned about it, I basically... What you do is you donate $1,000. There's another 100 people. And so that makes a pool of $100,000. And then basically we have these not-for-profits charities come on one night and they all present what they want to use the funding for. And then everyone, the community group votes. And then the, you know, the person who wins who pitched their project and through the process of the like Shark Tank pitch, before that, they're basically learning, they have people who work with them to like develop their presentation skills. So they can then go talk to government or private investors. And so then one person gets a $100,000 grant to put towards whatever they do. So I think a couple of years past, it's been like ear bus or homeless healthcare. And then the other two pitchers get $10,000 to keep propelling their projects. So that's what we do regularly each year. But I do think that I would like to set up some sort of recurring fortnightly donation.
Yeah, no, I would encourage you to do that to any charity of choice. And then secondly, what have you last watched on a streaming service?
Oh, God. Oh, my God. No, I know. And I shouldn't take the Lord's name in vain because it was. It's that show, it's a new doco.
Keep Sweet Train of A. Oh, I finished that last night.
How did it just like, oh, and then I'm lying in bed on Reddit looking at Warren Jeffs and I'm like, every time I thought that it was at its worst, it just kept getting so much
worse. I was like 5 minutes into the first episode. I'm like, this is human trafficking and slavery.
Yes.
But I thought, at the end, it was going to just all dissolve. It still exists.
Yes, I know. And how good was that very, very subtle? I loved the way that they did it at the end. Oh, I don't want to really spoil it, but also they are still there. Basically, they had one documentarian sort of in, must be near the community, and he just like ordered a drink from someone at a cafe, but you could see that they are in the very like traditional FDLS dress. And I just thought that like they didn't have to say anything. And what you took away was like, wow, this community is still absolutely...
So everyone, imagine a country town of like 8,000 people all being in a cult.
Yeah.
That's what it is, with one leader in prison for raping underage girls.
And it was quite interesting because Glenn and I were... We were watching Keep Sweet, Pray in a Bay at the same time as we were doing a lot of driving, and we were listening to a podcast called The Commune, and it's about like a hyper-sex cult in New Zealand. So we're like, from one side, it's like this very restrictive sex environment, except for like, you know, all of the disgusting things that happen. And then we're listening to this other one where they're just like having sex in front of kids. And anyway, I probably need to like watch something a little bit lighter. Maybe I'll pivot to some reality TV. Well, I mean, it is. Oh.
Well, that was as reality as it gets, if I'm being honest.
Oh,
but
no.
Yeah, I've just finished that, and it's just so crazy. And as if the stuff hasn't stopped going on in there.
Yeah.
And there was like, they took, so basically everyone will finish up. There was one part of it where they built a new compound in Texas to hide from the authorities that's still there today. And the town in, I think it was Arizona, where they kind of started, they took like 500 kids from their parents, mainly young girls, and had all these kids in the compound. Like, it's just... Oh, anyway.
I really enjoy documentaries that basically
it was done very well.
Open my eyes to something. Like, I was sitting there watching this being like, how have I been moving through the world and I'm not aware of this absolute atrocity? So
yeah, it's wild. So wild.
A gripping watch.
Well, when do you want to do the guest host wedding episode?
Oh, well, I'll start putting my feelers out to someone who might want to do it with me.
Who would you? Yeah, get someone.
I wonder, maybe would Victoria Devine's getting.
Yeah, do it with her.
She's getting married as well. So maybe if you can connect us. No, I haven't talked to her yet, but she's on my list.
Yeah, the only thing is she might be doing her own thing on her own
really
podcast.
She really is like, that's true. Yeah. I'll have a think.
Find someone else that you can do it with.
Okay. It's on my to-do list.
Yeah.
I have to go to work.
Yeah, I need to go and get a coffee and wake up. So
invest in VAS.
Yes. All right. Good hustle. And we'll just email me.
Yes.
When you want to record or whatever.
I'll see you on August 5th.
Yes.
Yay.
Yes. Yes.
I'm so excited for a wine and buy your tickets to the live shows.
Awesome. Oh, actually, JP in my team's getting married soon. So you can just do it with her if you want.
Yeah. Epic. Let's do it.
And she's like heaps frugal, tight ass.
Oh, good. And I'm probably not being as frugal as I should be.
Be good balance.
Oh, okay.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye, Glenn.
Bye.
We acknowledge the Awabakal people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast. My Millennial Money supports a variety of charities, and we encourage you to consider giving as part of your overall financial strategy. If you would like some giving options, or if you're unsure about which charity you can support, head to mymillennial.money/charities for more info. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination, and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorized representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.